The following podcast will contain spoilers and explicit language. Hello and welcome to episode 92 of...
Yeah, it's that bad.
My name is Joel.
I'm Martin.
And I'm Kevin.
This is a show that looks at supposedly bad movies and asks the question, is it really that bad? And what that boils down to is that we look at movies that are rotten or Rotten Tomatoes and reevaluate that score. Does it really deserve to be that low? Tonight's movie is 1985's Return to Oz.
Directed, that was uncalled
for. Directed by Walter Murch, starring Fairuza Balk, Nicole Williamson, Jean Marsh, Piper Laurie, and Matt Clark. Return to Oz is a 1985 film which is an unofficial sequel to Victor Fleming's The Wizard of Oz. This movie currently holds a 52% on Rotten Tomatoes. How about a plot synopsis?
It has been 6 months since Dorothy has returned home from Oz and she still cannot sleep. She's been going on about imaginary places and people so much that Auntie M takes her to see a doctor. She promptly escapes from the mental hospital and wakes up in Oz, where her pet chicken, Belina, can now talk. There she meets a whole new bunch of friends, and they set off to rescue the Scarecrow from the evil Gnome King who has found her ruby slippers and has used them to lay waste to the Emerald City and take over Oz.
Okay, Return to Oz. This movie was sponsored by Catherine. And Catherine writes in and says, "Hello, Martin, Joel, and Kevin. Like many others, I was pulled into your show via the Twilight episode, immediately became hooked, and have been an avid listener ever since. I am a first-year PhD student based in the Midwest, and I know that your podcast will help keep me sane as I prepare for my qualifying exams in June. My first instinct was to select a film that you would never voluntarily choose to subject yourselves to. However, I soon realized that asking three 20-something men to sit through a film starring Mary-Kate or Ashley Olsen would amount to cruel and unusual punishment. Therefore, for my pick, I would like you to review the 1985 cult family classic, Return to Oz. The film has a definite love it or hate it quality, as evidenced by its 52% score on Rotten Tomatoes. So, I'm interested to hear what you guys think. All the best, Catherine." Okay, guys, Return to Oz, what's your history with this?
I've never seen this movie. Although, I would have preferred to watch a Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen detective movie over this any day.
How the West Was Fun, or New York Minute, or whatever the hell.
Brother for Sale, only 25 cents.
I didn't even know this movie existed.
Me neither.
I thought there was a one Oz movie, and that was it.
Yeah, I never seen this either. Never even heard of it. So this is all brand new to me. It's surprising. I mean, the people on our Facebook page have come out and said that they love this movie. This seems like the kind of movie that kids would latch on to when they're young and like talk about. But I never really heard anybody talk about this at all.
Mm-mm. We've all seen the original, I imagine, right?
Yes.
Okay.
How much do you know of the Wizard of Oz story? Because I only have... It's just like Hook with me. I just remember like the key talking points of it.
For The Wizard of Oz, I have information that I'm not sure if it's factual or not. I've heard so many different things about the original movie that what's fact and like what is just made up is blending together.
Well, I mean, it was a wholesome story about a person that hangs himself in a tree, right?
I remember. If you look real closely in the background, you can see him swinging.
You know, if I put Dark Side of the Moon on, it matches up perfectly with the scene transitions in The Wizard of Oz.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay, let's do what we always do at the top of the show. We'll discuss the actors one by one and we'll see how you thought they did. Okay, first up, making her triumphant return to Yeah, It's That Bad. Not since episode 2 have we seen hide nor hair of Fairuza Balk. Here she is in her debut film. How do you guys think she did as a child actress?
Liked her better than I liked her in
Bad Lieutenant.
Bad Lieutenant. I thought that she was okay, especially for like a Disney movie.
Piss poor performance perpetrated by this prepubescent preteen.
Wow, that's harsh.
Yeah, I thought she was terrible.
She's like 10.
Yeah, I thought she was, and I don't necessarily blame her. I think it was probably the directing, which we'll get to, because that was terrible. It just seemed like it was one scene to another with her. It was just, a lot of times she was just kind of like screaming. It was terrible.
I don't know. I thought she did better than most of the young kids we get on this show.
Oh, I don't think so. I think she was atrocious.
Really?
Yeah, she had, I didn't root for her at all. She was so like cold with her line delivery.
Like a little Richie Rich.
It's the Tin Man. That's how she would say it.
Whoa, like, did Fairuza Balk watch in here?
Listen, the Tin Woodman chopped off his leg. Then he chopped off his arm.
Then he had nothing left.
Then he had nothing left. Even a tin head.
He was just made of tin.
Yeah, exactly. And you're defending this performance?
Well, compared to Cameron Bright.
You
gotta put it on the Cameron Bright scale of child acting, right? I mean,
he's the banner child actor.
He's the bellwether that we judge.
5 out of 5 little Cameron Brights.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but...
It's completely indifferent.
How apathetic is she? She's off the charts on the Cameron Bright scale.
All right, Joel, where do you put her on the Cameron Bright scale?
She's better than him.
Well, how many Cameron Brights do you give her?
Okay, next up, Nicole Williamson. He was the Gnome King. How do you think he did?
Is it Nicole or Nickel?
I'll leave it at that.
It's a metal.
It's N-I-C-O-L, correct?
Correct. Nicole.
Nicole. He was okay. Was that right with him?
I thought he was probably the best guy in this thing. Tip-top shape, I thought.
It's tough because a lot of the performances, you don't actually see the actor.
You see him. Wasn't he the doctor as well?
Yeah, he was the doctor and he was the gnome king.
So, yeah.
I know, we see him. I was talking about everyone else. Like, you don't see the pumpkin guy. You don't see TikTok.
I thought the gnome king was probably the best actor in this movie. That's not saying much.
All right, yeah, I liked him. Next up, Jean Marsh. And she played the evil queen woman.
She reminded me of Nurse Ratched, like the way she acted. Yeah, just that like that. Cold, like vindictive. I don't know. I didn't like her, which is what they wanted. So successful.
She was a better queen than the evil queen in Willow, which is a movie which I think we'll be referencing a lot in this review because I felt like I was watching Willow all over again with this movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that. She was better than Queen in Willow. Yeah, she was pretty good.
And what about Piper Laurie making her triumphant return? Yes, that bad since her days in the faculty. She played Auntie M.
I thought she was pretty good. I think that she had a pretty good rapport with Fruza Bulk, especially in the beginning of the movie. Those scenes, they worked pretty well together.
Yeah, she was all right. She's pretty good.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah.
So A+, A+ for everybody, huh? Kevin's nodding his head.
B-.
He's super happy about it. All right, let's get into the brief history of Return to Oz. Walter Murch began development of the film in 1980 during a brainstorming session with Walt Disney Pictures production chief Tom Wilhite. It was just a fishing expedition on both our parts, Merch remembered, but one of the questions he asked was, what are you interested in that you might also be interested in? That's a direct quote.
What are you interested in that you might also be interested in?
Yeah, it's a direct quote. And I said, another Oz story. And Tom sort of straightened up in his chair because it was turned out, unbeknownst to me, that Disney owned the rights to all of the Oz stories. Wow. And they were particularly interested in doing something with them because the copyright was going to run out in the next 5 years. The film is based loosely on the second and third Oz books, The Marvelous Land of Oz and Ozma of Oz. The element about TikTok being the Royal Army of Oz derives from TikTok of Oz, which itself was based on a dramatic production, The TikTok Man of Oz. Murch also used the book Wisconsin Death Trip as a historical source for the film. Murch took a decidedly darker tone on Baum's source material than the 1939 original, which he knew starting out would be a gamble. Between the development period and actual shooting, there was a change of leadership at Walt Disney Studios, with Wilhite being replaced by Richard Berger, and the movie's budget increased. Once shooting began, Murch began to fall behind schedule, and there was further pressure from the studio, leading to Murch being fired as director for a short period. George Lucas and other high-profile filmmakers, including Francis Ford Coppola, supported Murch in discussions with the studio, and Murch was reinstated and finished the film. The film was made without the involvement of MGM, the studio that made the 1939 film. No approval was necessary because by 1985, the Oz books on which the film was based were in the public domain, and the subsequent Oz books had been optioned to Disney many years earlier. A large fee was paid, however, to use the Ruby Slippers, which were still the intellectual property of MGM at the time. The film received an Academy Award nomination for Best Visual Effects. Fruza Bulk and Emmy Ridley were nominated for Young Artist Awards. The film received 2 Saturn Award nominations for Best Fantasy Film and Best Younger Actor, Fruza Bulk. The film's interpretation of Oz is featured in the Storybook Land Canal Boats attraction at Disneyland Resorts Paris. Emile Guillet of the AV Club frequently refers to the film's dark nature as unsuitable for its intended audience of young children. Despite it being one of her favorite movies growing up, the film inspired a fan-made documentary entitled Return to Oz, The Joy That Got Away, made especially for the internet. Okay, this movie had a budget of $28 million. How much did it make worldwide, Kevin?
$12
million. $10
million? $11 million. I'm going to split the difference and none of you win.
It's almost as if we already knew.
Yeah, it's almost as if you read the article already.
We should totally watch that documentary.
Okay, Return to Oz. So this movie starts out in a way that I've never seen any movie ever start before or since.
We get adult Firuza Balk. Basically thanking us for renting the movie. And
I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah.
My name's Firuza Balk. I hope you enjoy my movie. Bye.
So
amazing.
Weird.
Okay, so then it cuts to zooming out through a window and into Firuza Balk's bedroom.
Yeah, she's a young girl.
It's interesting you say young because she looked like she was 4 years younger than the original Dorothy.
Yes, I was thinking about this. Like,
I actually wrote down that she looks 10 years younger than the original Dorothy.
Wasn't Dorothy in that, like, in her teens, late teens?
Yeah.
I'm going to say
like
late
pushing
teens.
Pushing 20?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was absolutely shocked at how young she was.
It makes more sense for that kind of story for her to be older, right?
She's 6 months older now.
Because she can get into more tussles and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, but she was like 10 in this. Or 9 or 6 or
4.
4. I don't even know. Maybe this is one of those instances where in the book, this is the right age.
I don't care.
What's the matter?
The precedent was set by that movie. Since that was such like a landmark movie.
Yeah. Like,
Dorothy in my mind is 19.
Everyone who saw this movie saw it because of the original movie, not because they read these stupid books. Did you ever read an Oz book?
No.
No. No one did.
I've never read a book, period.
That's true.
You didn't read about the TikTok man.
Yeah, I'm writing TikTok man fan fiction as we speak. Okay, well, Dorothy is lonely, depressed, delusional, psychotic.
She's suicidal. Living in her own chaotic.
Yeah, whatever.
She has post-traumatic stress disorder from the tornado, and she's out of her mind.
I actually like this setup a lot. There's a lot of stories in fiction where people go to magical lands, have adventures, and then they come back to the real world, right? This movie starts off with what happens after the person comes back. So we have Wizard of Oz, Narnia. What happened to a person when they came back to the real world and they have absolutely no proof that they were in the magical world, that they were in Narnia or whatever, and there's nothing to show for it? They're running around telling everybody, oh, I was in this magic world with flying monkeys and a giant head was talking to me and a lion was afraid of me. Ooh.
Yeah, and aside from the fact that no one would believe you, you lived in a world that was immensely more interesting than the real world.
Yes.
I feel like we're stepping past the elephant in the room here. You're going to start to doubt your own reality. You're going to start to doubt which one is real because they can't both be real.
It's true.
You'd probably just lose it.
An adult might kill themselves.
Probably.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not a little kid that can readily accept things like that, if you're an adult and you have like a real strong setup of what's real and what's fake, you'd probably lose it and kill yourself.
Yeah, I thought this was a really cool setup for this story. And that's where the movie kind of goes off. Like Auntie M and the uncle, they were really nervous about Dorothy because she's this psychotic weirdo running around telling everybody about Oz.
She's not sleeping.
She's not eating.
And this,
she's suddenly got younger. She de-aged. She was 20 a couple days ago.
All this is happening after a giant tornado ripped their house in half.
I like that a lot too. Like, that actually happened. That's part of the canon of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, they're rebuilding a new house. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and TM's like, we're gonna have to get 2 mortgages.
Yeah, they're done.
I mean, like, you could make the argument that the original Oz story all happened in this girl's head.
Oh, absolutely did.
That's the question that I'm left with when this movie's over, and we'll have to revisit it when we get to the end of this review. Is this actually happening, or is she just a psychotic weirdo?
She is a psychotic weirdo.
I don't even want to say psychotic weirdo. Like, if, see, in the original Oz, it's like a 20-year-old woman, so like, it's like she had delusions and she was knocked out and was just having a dream about it, because she comes to and she's waking up. In this movie, that's not the case.
She's been driven mad.
She's just out of her mind.
Yeah, the banality of life. life in Kansas in 1899.
Yeah, the Dust Bowl, whatever.
Boredom is a burden.
No one should bear.
Okay.
Well, her guardians are pretty upset. They're worried. They look in the newspaper and they see that a new medical marvel has been invented. Electroshock therapy. It'll cure all your ills. You got a headache, your leg hurts, you know.
Sounds amazing.
Your ass is itchy. You just get electroshock in your brain and it cures everything.
I hear it clears up your wrinkles too.
Yeah, your sinuses, everything. So Auntie M takes Dorothy to see this doctor and he inspects her. He's listening to her tell this insane story. And I totally understand that guy's point of view. If I was sitting there listening to this little kid yammer on and on for 3 hours straight about Oz and scarecrows and tin men, I was like, wow, this girl's crazy. She's a lunatic.
She's dangerous.
Yeah, but then she shows him that key.
Yeah.
That's just like their barn key, I guess.
Yeah. And she's like, this is the key to Oz. Like, oh, like, my God, this girl's dangerous.
Yeah, I would just lock her in a room at that point. She's out of her mind.
Well, when Dorothy is locked up in this room waiting for her execution, this mysterious magical girl starts appearing in reflections and in her visions. All of a sudden, she just materializes in the room and leaves her a little pumpkin, a little jack-o'-lantern for her.
She just leave it. They have a discussion
about it.
So, why didn't she freak out when this girl just materialized in her room?
She just been to Oz, man. She's seen it all.
Okay, so this girl leaves this jack-o'-lantern and Dorothy does what every girl would do with a jack-o'-lantern and starts combing its imaginary hair.
Freaked me out, man.
She is
you like that?
A lunatic.
That was like something out of a horror movie, right?
Yeah. Right?
It was really weird. It's like someone needs to put this girl down immediately. She's going to kill people.
Well, they take Dorothy into the room. They're going to pretty much cause instant brain death by shocking her.
We're in the electric age, Joel.
It's a modern miracle.
Modern miracle. Tesla is so proud.
I actually like this a lot. The way this stuff looked, the doctor, and he was talking about the dawn of a new century. I like this stuff. The real world. Mm-hmm. I think the real world is better than the fantasy world in this movie. Well, when everybody is running around trying to bring the generators back online, they pretty much leave Dorothy strapped to a gurney in a completely pitch black room where the sounds of people screaming in agony are bellowing around her. It's like she's in the bowels of hell. It's like, who's there? What's going on? Where am I?
You know, that being said, it could have been scarier, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're right. Like, the situation was very scary. But when I was watching it, that could have been more intense than it was.
Yeah,
they gave me some extreme show close-ups and shaky cam and jump scares.
This movie needed more jump scares.
Yeah, I needed more J-horror. This wasn't enough J-horror in
this. She needed to jitter her way across the room.
Well, we got something close to that because as Dorothy's sitting there in the dark, the magical mystery girl just materializes out of nowhere and rescues Dorothy from certain death, correct?
Yeah.
I feel bad for Kansas because at this point, I guess they're getting hit by the greatest storm of all time because they're...
The deluge. Flood. Yeah, biblical.
The great biblical flood. So Dorothy is rescued by this girl. They're running away. They're being chased and, well, I guess the river is raging at this point. It's overflowing.
Something really interesting happens during this chase sequence when they're trying to escape. They're running down the stairs and the head nurse woman, who is this really angry looking woman in this pretty cool looking black dress.
Oh, the shoulder part?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Pretty evil looking.
Yeah. She like wings on her shoulders.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. She looks at Dorothy and screams, but the magical mystery girl is there too and she gets caught in the flashlight and the nurse has this look in her eye and it made me wonder, does she see this other girl? Because they don't say it one way or the other. What do you think?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
This is part of Dorothy's psychosis.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's out of her mind.
Okay, well, they run away, they escape, and they make it to a river. They do a reverse Moses, and they toss themselves into the river, into this basket thing, and then they float away. The mystery girl gets sucked into the abyss, never to be heard from again.
Yeah, she drowns.
She drowns.
Good.
Comically.
Good.
Or tragically, I don't know.
Hilariously.
And the headmistress woman is just left screaming like a fool at the river's edge.
Yeah, where did they get this, like, raft?
It just appeared out of nowhere.
It's a chicken coop.
Is that what it was? It looked like a cage.
Yeah,
I thought it was
it's a chicken coop.
I thought it was the same door that Kate Winslet was on at the end of Titanic.
That's what it looked like to me. She had her whistle.
Well, they don't really waste any time. I mean, what, 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes to get to Oz?
20 to 25.
That's pretty good.
I was keeping an eye on it.
Oh, yeah, you
can like,
track?
I was like, let's get there. Come on.
let's hurry it up. Yeah, they got there pretty quick. I mean, about the same pace of another Disney movie, Tron Legacy. Very yeah. similar to this movie. And when she gets to Oz, immediately things are bizarre. There's a chicken in her coop and it's talking to her. It's a little puppet. Well, the first thing we see in Oz is that Dorothy ends up in the desert of death or whatever.
The deadly desert.
Of death. Why don't you explain what that is?
It's this giant desert that apparently if a human or non-human living entity touches the sand, it immediately turns to sand. It's dead.
What do you think of this?
It's a pretty cool concept.
Yeah, and when it actually happens in the movie, I could see a little kid looking at that and being like, oh my god, like really freaking out, like a little 5-year-old or something.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I could see myself making my kid watch this and then laughing at them when they get upset.
Yeah, laughing at them when they're crying. All right, you're Dorothy and you know she knew that this stuff is dangerous, right?
Yeah, immediately.
You gotta bottle this and take it with you, right? Like as a weapon?
No, because if you touch it...
Yeah, you can't risk touching
it. No, you put it in a jar and you toss it in someone's face.
This is an Ocarina of Time.
Jar,
what jar does she have with her?
She gets a lunch pail treat 3 seconds later.
She went to Leonia's farm and got a milk jar.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. So they show this viewpoint. The camera shows the desert. They're surrounded by desert, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it looks like it goes on forever.
There's no green in sight. And she's just like, all right, let's go. She jumps out of the cage or whatever she's in. She's like hopping from rock to rock so carelessly. If you knew what was going to happen to you if you touched that sand, you'd be so careful, right?
Nah, she was pretty precarious, I thought.
She was bent. She's been in Oz before. She knows what she's doing.
So she skipped and she hopped over these rocks, and 2 seconds later, she was on grass?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
She's good at skipping. She skipped her whole way down the yellow brick road the first time she was here.
Well, what do you think about the evil faces that appeared on the rocks in this movie?
I could have done without those. They were pretty stupid looking. So just about every time, in between every cutscene, there'd be a shot of a rock, and then this face would appear on the rock, which is just like a couple of holes.
Yeah, credential.
It was so weird. Like, how many times did we have to see a rock with a fake face in it? 4 trillion times?
Yeah, every scene had one.
Every scene had 300 of them.
They're always smiling and winking at me.
They would, so that you'd see that rock, then you'd cut to this underground rock.
There's like this world, I guess, that they can travel in.
Underworld.
Underworld.
Yeah, keep back and say
their
there.
Own. Right. Yeah.
Well,
the lichens run through it.
What did you think of the effect, though? It's kind of interesting with the claymation faces on all the rocks. They're doing some interesting stuff in this movie.
I don't know. I thought it looked stupid.
Yeah?
But I guess for the time it was decent. I don't know.
Remind me of that Stone family from Neverending Story.
This said Neverending Story
all over it, right?
Yeah, they were doing copying and pasting. Yeah, I mean, it's around this point where I'm really noticing how bad the direction is in this movie.
How so?
It was just, I don't know. It just seemed so...
Flat?
Flaccid.
Wow.
I mean, this is the same problem that we had when we were watching Willow. It's just a series of things.
Yeah, people walk from place to place and look at stuff. Yeah.
Like, look at this. Look at the road is destroyed.
What is that?
They're made out of stone. Like, I don't care. Why do I care?
Yeah,
like,
it's a lot of Dorothy talking to herself / talking to her talking chicken. And it's just, I don't know. It's real evident that these people are amateurs handling these scenes at this point to me.
Hmm.
Like, it is not shot very well, but I have a major problem with the story. I don't care about these characters at all.
Yeah, I'm in your boat as well.
If that got hit by a truck driving, careening down the yellow brick road, and that was the end of the movie, I would have been like, great, awesome.
Well, so maybe this is a good time to talk about this. Do you like the original Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
I'm indifferent. I don't feel one way or the other.
I don't care for it. I don't think it's a good story. I think it benefited from the time frame that it was released.
Yes.
That was the black and white turned to color. I think it had interesting characters in it. Cowardly Lion, Tin Man, the Scarecrow, like they were interesting characters. But the story itself, I think, is crap.
The story, I don't think, is that great in the original. The acting is really good.
Yes.
The way it was shot is really good. And for what it was at the time, yeah, you're absolutely right. It definitely benefited from, Technicolor or whatever, advancements were going on at that moment. That was the first color full-length film, right?
I think it was, yeah. So we get into this new Oz, and we're left with none of those good actors, none of those good performances, and none of the interesting characters from the first one, which I think are what make people
We do get wheel people, which is pretty cool.
Well, Dorothy and her chicken, they make it to the Emerald City, and it looks like a bombed out husk, like World War II hit it. And I was getting Willow flashbacks because when they went inside, everybody was turned to stone. There weren't any goblins or trolls or whatever dancing around it, though.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, it turns out that the emeralds in Emerald City had been taken, and the Tin Man and the lion were turned to stone.
Scarecrow's nowhere to be found. King Scarecrow?
And we get to see the Wheelers. They show up. They are pretty interesting looking motley crew. Why don't you explain what they look like?
Look like Joker gang from Batman Beyond.
Yeah, but they have, instead of having extremities, like normal hands and feet, they have wheels that they move around on. I don't get it.
Imagine a person hunched over on all fours on the ground, right? So their back is curved up to the air and their head is kind of like bobbing up and down, and then extend their legs out like double the length and their arms as well. And that's pretty much what the Wheelers' bodies look like these hunched over weirdos. And they have these wheels attached to the bottom of their feet, and they were just skating around and causing mischief. I was looking at them and I was wondering, how do they move around? Like, how do they propel themselves?
Yeah, where does their momentum come from?
It just looks weird, right? Like, how do they work?
I don't know. I really don't know.
It doesn't make sense to me.
Because, like, when you see them start to move, they kind of, like, fall all over themselves. Few times we actually do see that.
Well, Dorothy runs away, and she discovers a mechanical man, a little steampunk soldier guy, this little roly-poly fat robot thing, and you got to crank him up to crank up his brain, crank up his voice, and crank up his body.
Pump up the jams.
That too, and he'll walk around and he'll talk to you. What'd you think of this guy?
He was, it's just a replacement Tin Man.
Yep.
And he was the few mildly entertaining or interesting things that happened during this movie kind of centered around him.
Yep.
But, it's a robot. It's supposed to be lifeless, and that just doesn't play well in a movie.
I thought it was okay.
I liked him. I thought he was cool looking. I also like the concept that you have to keep winding up his gears to make him work. And I also think it's a cool idea that whoever built him made it so he couldn't wind himself, because that's a pretty good idea, actually. Because what do you want, this immortal killing machine running around perpetually forever murdering people?
Yes. Yeah. No, I thought he looked cool. Like, I like his character design. Maybe it's just affected me just seeing the Wheelers, and now I see this thing, so anything looks good, I guess. I don't know.
Well, we have this metal man. His name is TikTok. He wakes up in the morning feeling like P. Diddy. They go to this opulent castle. Dorothy, the new Tin Man 2.0, and the talking chicken. And they meet this woman. She's playing the mandolin, and she seems like a really nice lady. And they're like, oh, hey, where's the scarecrow? Blah, blah, blah. Help us out. And she's like, follow me into this room. I'll change this into a little bit more comfortable. She opens up the room, and inside it are a bunch of human heads on pedestals or whatever. And they're all alive. And they're looking around and staring at them.
Eight heads in a duffel bag.
Yep. Danny DeVito was there dancing around. If I was a little kid and I saw that, I know for a fact that would have really freaked me out.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
This was the coolest scene in the movie.
Yes.
By far.
Yeah, this witch, takes her head off and swaps it out with another head. And it's not like it's her same head with a different hairstyle. It's a completely different woman's head. And she puts it on. Which begs the question, where is her consciousness? Because the heads were talking, but they were her
really
mind.
Good question.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess, does she place her consciousness in all of them? They're all a part of her?
A lot of people have mentioned to me how scary they thought this movie was as a kid. Like, it freaked them the hell out. Everything that happened before this, I'm like, whatever. And stuff that happens after this is like, who cares?
Yeah.
But this stuff right here, I get it. This is creepy stuff to put in a little kid's movie. This headless woman running around. She grabs Dorothy and she's like, I'm going to lock you in my attic so you can age. And when you get older, I'm going to chop your head off and wear it.
Yeah, and it's because she's like decent looking. She's not going to be pretty.
The evil queen locks Dorothy in this room, and in it is Jack Pumpkinhead. I'm pretty sure there's a series of bad horror movies called Pumpkinhead 1, 2, and 3.
Yep.
But this Jack Skellington pumpkin guy is there dancing around. He's Scarecrow 2.0 or whatever.
Yep.
What'd you think of this guy, his effects?
I loved the effects. I think those my favorite part of this movie are the Pumpkinhead effects.
How come?
It looked great to me. Like, I was surprised that they were able to do the things that they did, because it would like bend and elongate when he was speaking and doing different things. Like, it would actually have movement to it. It wasn't just like just old plain stationary object.
Yeah.
I thought I was really impressed with it.
How do you think they did it?
It's a puppet.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the Jim Henson guys did it.
Was there like a little person inside of it?
Mm-mm. There was a little guy inside of TikTok.
No. I knew that there was a little guy in TikTok because he's credited.
No, this is the way they did the Scarecrow, according to Fairuza Balk, an exclusive behind the scenes interview on the DVD. She said that it was, for the most part, it was puppeteered by the Jim Henson people. But whenever they had like wide shots of him walking around, it was a super tall, slender man running around.
Slender man?
Yeah. They have this whole sequence where the evil queen is running around headless, trying to kill Dorothy. Dorothy takes a page from Willow's book and decides to create her own demonic abomination upon the world, where she steals the queen's magic life-giving powder.
Life powder.
Yeah, and she creates this bizarre concoction of, she ties this moose-like creature's head to a couch and gives him these palm tree...
sofa and palm fern.
Yeah, wings.
Like, yeah.
She puts the powder on it and this thing comes to life. I would imagine this thing would have woke up and just started screaming with agony. Like, why am I alive? Screaming in pain. But instead, no, he's happy to be there. He's like, oh, great, let's do it. And he flies away. I don't know how those crappy fern wings were able to support them.
It's all magic.
Static lift.
It's all magic.
It's all static
lift.
Yeah,
Bernoulli's principle was in full effect.
Yeah, this was straight out of Never Ending Story, right?
Right, yeah, where they're flying away on the flying dog.
Oh my gosh.
He essentially just stole that script. Just flat out stole it.
They're flying away, going to the Gnome King's palace in the mountains. Jack O'Lantern's head pops off and it starts making its terminal descent. And just like Felix Baumgartner, they do this insane descent after his scarecrow head. They dive down so fast that the scarecrow head starts to float in perfect sync with them. So Dorothy's able to just grab it and pluck it. At that point, wouldn't like the G-forces and stuff like either just rip her out or blow her up or something?
I don't know. Felix Baumgartner was falling at a maximum velocity of 820 something miles an hour.
They were going faster than that.
Yeah, they were definitely going way faster than the speed of sound. I don't know.
I don't have any problem with this aspect of it. My problem lies into the fact that they fell 3 trillion feet and landed perfectly, like on the couch.
They did.
She landed sitting on the couch.
Yeah, Indiana Jones style.
That's outrageous.
Is it as outrageous as surviving a thermonuclear explosion in a refrigerator?
More outrageous.
I don't know about that.
How far were they falling?
It looked like they were in deep orbit.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was just like, they don't care.
I think that you have a higher chance of surviving a free fall than you do a thermonuclear explosion in a refrigerator.
Are you kidding me? No. They were so high up. They were above the clouds.
A hydrogen bomb, when it detonates, is like 10 times the temperature of the surface of the sun.
The couch landed landed on her butt on the couch.
She
as
did.
If she plopped down from 3 feet above it.
Okay, so they make it to the Gnome King's palace, and the Gnome King makes himself known. He is this rock man monster thing. Never Ending Story had that, right? Like a talking mountain thing?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure did.
Yeah, well, he cracks open the mountain, and it sucks Dorothy in, and she falls into this infinite abyss, and she looks at this psychedelic 2001 Space Odyssey light show thing.
It reminded me of the escape from Andross at the end of Star Fox.
Any moment you can to mention that, you'll take it, right?
Listen, if he was going to go down, he was going to take him with him.
Trust your instincts.
Bap, 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 bap.
Okay, yeah, so she makes it down, and we meet the Gnome King face to face. Some interesting stuff's going on with this Gnome King. Okay, first and foremost, whenever we see him, before we got to this point in the movie, he was always off camera and talking to this face in the wall,
yep.
Right? We might have believed he was a person or a gnome, right?
I kept picturing
David the gnome.
A lawn gnome.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing. I was picturing a gnome.
But instead, he's this rock demon man. He's made out of rock.
Yeah, he's rock too.
Yeah, he's part rock.
I was shocked.
Well, for the most part, when we see him, he's a claymation rock man. But somewhere along the line, they're like, ah, the hell with this claymation crap. And they just took the actor and put this crappy makeup on his face. And he's just like there, dancing around, talking to her.
Yeah,
that was a shocking shift,
right? I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I was like, did that just happen? Did someone else come in to make this movie, like in the middle of the end of the movie?
They must have lost money to do the effects, right? They just didn't have enough.
They just didn't care. How could you not plan out your budget properly so that you just lose funding and you're like,
just put him in there. No one will notice.
Put him in there and cake some mud on his face.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I think they may have made that change because of the ruby slippers.
Okay.
They had to show him wearing the ruby slippers.
Only a human being can gender bend like that.
Yeah.
How are they going to show like feet? That would have looked ridiculous, right?
Sure. Or they could have just had the claymation man make his clay hand come out and open his fist and the ruby slippers would be in his hand.
Well, they'd.
And he'd close them and draw them back inside himself. But instead, we get this man who looks like Good King Wenceslas or like Father Christmas or something, made out of rock.
Yeah, I saw Santa Claus.
Yeah,
I did.
He pulls up his dress, and what's he have down there?
Sweet, beautiful ruby slippers.
He's like a stone Dr. Frankenfurter dancing around, gender bending underground.
He lets us know that this whole time he had used the ruby slippers to take control of Oz.
Yeah, I didn't know they had that kind of power.
I didn't know they had the ability to control everything.
By the end of this movie, they use the ruby
everything.
Yeah, they use these ruby slippers like they use the Dragon Balls to like bring everyone back to life. It's insane. I didn't know they had that kind of power. I thought they were just there to like bring you back and forth, like teleport you.
I guess they grant whatever wish you have.
It's not that. You get like unlimited wishes.
God-like powers.
You literally, those slippers can take their reality and make it whatever they want.
Seems like a really dangerous artifact to just have lying around.
For sure.
Yeah, you get freaking Gnome King stealing it.
Yeah, stealing it and gender bending underground, dancing around in stilettos. Well, the Gnome King, he decides to play a little game, and just like our good friend Jigsaw, he puts him through this torture chamber. He's like, let's play a game. Live or die, make your choice. He tosses him into this room that's filled with knickknacks and bric-a-brac and all this crap. And he's like, I turned the scarecrow into a little decoration. If you can figure out which one it is, I'll let you live, bro. If not, you're going to join my menagerie of useless crap. And the door to get into this room made me laugh out loud because it looked like Goatsy built it. All these hands came out and ripped this giant hole open.
Goatsy.cx. Rest in peace. Yeah. That's all I can say about
it. If you
that.
Don't know what that is, don't go to that website. You've been warned. I'm glad you got that, Kevin. I'm glad you were on point. You understand what I'm saying, though, right?
Yep.
All of Dorothy's friends are screwing up. They're a bunch of bumbling buffoons or idiots. They keep picking the wrong stuff and they keep getting turned into useless crap. Dorothy's able to figure out the mystery of the magic room, which is anyone who was from Oz was turned into a green thing.
Great.
The end. Yeah, so they manage to rescue everybody, but the Gnome King, he gets pretty pissed off. He turns into this giant angry skull face thing in Hellfire. He grabs the Gump and eats his body and all this crazy stuff happens. The whole time in this movie, the Gnome King is really scared of the chicken, the talking chicken. He's like, do they have that chicken? Oh my God, no chickens allowed. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was because they pulled a Willow and the chicken was really the kind witch of the East or whatever.
Okay.
That's what I thought was going on. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting this at all. So what ended up happening?
So the chicken is in Pumpkinhead's pumpkin head. And
he's a Halloweeny.
The gnome.
Oh my!
You got that?
So the Gnome King, he grabs Pumpkinhead. He's got him hanging upside down. He's dangling him over his mouth. It's like, I'm gonna eat you. All of a sudden, an egg rolls out from Pumpkinhead and falls down the Gnome King's throat.
Little tiny egg. This guy is the size of Mount Kilimanjaro. He eats an egg that's like the size of a postage stamp. And what happens?
All his little rock minions, they're all like, poison.
Yeah, he goes into anaphylactic shock and he dies.
No, he's like allergic to it, right?
Yeah, it's poison. Because obviously, we all know that eggs are poison to rock creatures.
I had no idea. Maybe this is a folklore thing? I don't know. I know chickens can kill basilisks. That's a thing. But I don't know about this. Never heard of this.
Yeah, so let's stop for a second. Why was the chicken there?
Because she tagged along with Dorothy.
Yeah, so it was almost like that was all
worked out in the beginning.
Yeah. Like it's kind of random that the chicken would be there and that just so happens to be the thing that would save her.
Good point.
Pretty cheap, right? Pretty lazy story writing.
Do you feel cheated?
Yeah.
I thought it was stupid. I actually really don't understand why that killed him.
I don't understand why the chicken was there and why that was poison and why it killed him. That's what this whole story was from start to finish. It was a story about a chicken. We're constantly being asked, yeah. Where's the chicken? Is the chicken there?
Yeah, chicken
Does
run.
Have a chicken? Oh my gosh, it's a chicken. And then the chicken kills the bag. What a joke.
Yeah, well, after this guy, after he passes away, turns out that...
He said so delicately.
Yeah.
After the Gnome King passes on.
He actually died in a pretty horrific death. Like his face was like, it melted off and it left this demonic skull thing in the air behind the Hellfire. That's another thing I could see a little kid seeing that and being a little disturbed. And not like down with the sickness disturbed, like mentally sick disturbed.
Okay, well, after he's defeated, it turns out that the little girl that was helping Dorothy the whole time is really the true Princess of Oz.
Yeah.
Princess Ozma?
Yeah, Osmosis Jones.
Princess Osmosis Jones.
Well, before she appeared, I thought this was funny. They were like, Dorothy, Dorothy, we want you to be the new Queen of Oz. While the Scarecrow is the King of Oz. Does that mean that they have to marry each other and mate and have weird little babies?
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, that's the only logical step, right?
By the way, how freaky was the Scarecrow in
this
movie?
I was just going to bring him up. I thought he looked awful. He was awful.
Terrible.
He had like a Muppet face.
Yeah.
It was a human body with a Muppet face flapping around. It was terrible.
Atrocious.
Reminded me of Fozzie Bear.
Yeah.
That's what his face looked like.
But his face was completely inanimate.
Creepy looking.
It was. It just seemed out of place, too, didn't it?
Well, we get the last big Star Wars-esque slash Willow-esque slash every other movie like this-esque scene where they have the giant celebration scene where everyone's together in the palace and everyone's getting their medals and everyone's getting awarded. Like, all right, you did it. Congratulations. When the Ozma girl appears out of nowhere, help me. She appears in a mirror and she's like, hey, bro, why don't you help me out of this mirror? Watching 10 trillion movies has taught me anything. If a person in a mirror or a book or a painting asks you to get them out, don't do it. You don't do it, right?
They're there for a reason.
Yeah.
Someone put them there.
And 9 times out of 10, you're just going to swap places with them and you're going to get them stuck in there.
It's pretty good.
No, but Dorothy does it. She pulls her out and they're dancing around and she's the new queen and blah, blah, blah. And you want to talk about lazy writing. This is probably the laziest piece of crap I've ever seen in a movie yet. We're like, the whole time we're like, who's this Ozma person? They didn't set her up at all. So they're like, okay, let's remedy this. The camera just a quick pan to the left and some random slave girl number 6 is standing over there and she's like, that is Queen Ozma. Her father was the real king before the wizard. Then it pans to slave girl number 9 and she goes, yes, she is the true heir. Do you remember that?
I do.
It was so lazy.
Yeah.
Like, who are those people?
Who were they?
Yeah, like the Scarecrow should have told us that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Not only that, like if she was the daughter of the king before the wizard, how do these people know that? They would have been like little kids.
That's true too. Yeah, so during the celebration, we see the Cowardly Lion. There's no like no interaction.
No, he looked like crap.
Looks like a big dog.
Yeah.
The Tin Man's not even there, is he? I don't even remember seeing the Tin Man.
I didn't see him.
Like, she just didn't, like, say hi to these people.
Yeah.
Who, like, were supposed to be her friends.
She's got new friends now. Yeah, so that's pretty much the end of the movie. She clicks her heels and...
They're begging her to stay.
Yeah, please stay.
And she's like, no, I need to go home to my miserable life in 1900s Kansas so
even
I can work
on
a farm.
Even the chicken is like, that place sucks ass. I'm staying here.
The chicken.
The chicken has
smarter.
More sense. Like, hey, Dorothy, don't you remember what the last 6 months were? You were a social pariah, an outcast. People looked at you like you were an insane lunatic.
You couldn't sleep.
You couldn't eat.
You couldn't dream about it. You couldn't dream
sleep
about it.
Open your sleep. You can't dream about it.
Look, her life was horrible.
It was
nobody
you.
Understood her. She had no friends. She didn't interact with anybody. In fact, the furthest she had ever been from her house was a 6-hour wagon ride.
She
what
pretty
a
much,
horrible life.
I'm pretty sure she said that she was never happier than when she was in Oz.
Yeah, but she's just like, nope, sorry guys. I gotta go back.
I'm a masochist. I love pain and misery. You don't got any of that here. But I got plenty of that back home. So she clicks her heels together and she goes back to the real world. And the way they do it when she comes back to the real world, she's just like,
goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Muttering to herself in a ditch, covered in feces and cow urine. Which really adds credence to the idea that she didn't go anywhere. This is just all in her head. She's a lunatic.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's insane in the membrane. It's a fact. This is all...
Which is a pretty interesting choice because... Which means that in her mind, her subconscious gave her a choice, like trapdoor to get out. You can either stay here or go back to the real world. You decide. If you stay here, you're going to be a coma forever in the real world. Which in 1900s Kansas probably meant death for her, right? They weren't going to... What are they going to do? Put her in a sanitarium or something?
I don't know.
They probably would have killed her, like experimented on her and killed her.
That's what I would have done.
That's a good point. Self-preservation from her psychosis?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. The movie is setting up the situation where she can't deal with bad things happening to her. She just can't deal with it. So she creates this fantasy world for her. It's Oz.
So her uncle finds her on the shoreline. They rescue her. They go on the side of the road. Like, hey, we're going to take you home. And then, what is it, like the cops roll by?
I don't understand this at all. Apparently the night before.
The nurse?
Yeah, the night before during the rainstorm, a lightning bolt struck the doctor's office. It burst into flames. Everybody survives except the doctor because he loves his machine so much. He went back in there looking for his iPad and he died in the flames. Yeah, just like you said, the paddy wagon or whatever, the cops drive by, or maybe it was a hearse. I don't know. It was all black. And the head nurse is back there and she's staring at Dorothy.
Behind bars. Like,
why was
bars.
She arrested? I don't get it.
Yeah, what happened?
As if she killed people or something.
So now she is the same actress played the nurse role that played Princess Mumbai or whatever her name was.
Mumbai, yeah.
It's almost like they're arresting her for her actions in Oz.
That's a good point, yeah.
But this doesn't make any sense.
I don't get it.
Could we say that this is just another one of Dorothy's delusions because no one else noticed it?
Maybe.
Maybe.
She's really sick in the head.
She's dangerous.
She needs to be stopped?
Yeah.
Someone needs to stop her.
Well, we go back home and we get one last parting shot of Dorothy left in her horrible, miserable world. And she sees Ozma, one last vision of insanity before she goes. Ozma appears to her in the mirror. Hi, how's it going?
Wait. Her life's not miserable when she returns home.
Yeah.
The house has been rebuilt.
Overnight.
She has a new bedroom.
Overnight.
All of this overnight. So when she was gone, missing, this inspired her aunt and uncle to get their lives back together and rebuild the house?
Yeah, her uncle was being lazy the whole time. And when they finally got Dorothy out of the house for a day, they get some work done.
It seems almost like everyone was better off when she was in Oz.
Yeah, the world's a better place if you're dead. That was the moral of the butterfly effect.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that it transferred over really well to this story. The world is better when Dorothy's presumed dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it. That's Return to Oz. Let's find out what the real critics have to say about this movie. Any movie in which a Midwestern prairie actually looks more attractive and more interesting than the enchanted land over the rainbow is in big trouble. Richard Schickel, Time Magazine. There are some fine Oscar-nominated special effects, but the excitement just isn't there. TV Guide, Movie Guide. And finally, the work of ingenious technicians who seem either not to know what gave the original film its magic, or not to care. Janet Maslin, New York Times. Okay guys, this movie currently holds a 52% on Rotten Tomatoes, but is it really that bad?
This movie is horrendous. I mean, it's not in Buckaroo Banzai territory as far as putting me to sleep, but it was difficult to get through this movie. I just did not care about the characters. The story was almost non-existent. It was a big, it was almost like somebody walking on like a treadmill and they're just changing the scenery behind them. That being said, the acting was okay. I don't know. This movie just wasn't doing it for me. I just couldn't get involved. I think 50 is a little high in my opinion. I think it should be in the 30s. Probably going to give this movie a solid 1.5.
Wow.
Yeah, for me, the movie definitely is that bad. I am also going to slap down a 1 out of 5 here.
Whoa.
This was putting me to sleep. This has none of the charm or life of the original. Even Oz itself even looked dreary. It didn't have the glow that it once did. Even when it was restored, this movie sucked.
Okay, as for me, is it really that bad? I was originally going to give this a 3 because I liked the special effects, but...
I'm sorry, we're doing Return to Oz.
Yeah, we're not
Are you
doing
in the same movie as
yeah,
us?
Yeah, I guess not. I'm going to drop it down to a hot, steaming 2 out of 5 because, yeah, this movie was a boring chore to sit through. It really was bad. And compared to some of the other children's movies that we've watched on this show, this is bottom of the barrel. Like, Richie Rich is better than this.
Oh, yeah.
Willow is better than this, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Polar Express.
Willow had some moments that were actually kind of funny.
Oh yeah, for sure.
There was comedic relief in that movie.
Yeah,
and I could make out some semblance of a story. It was ridiculous, granted, but kind of do it.
Yeah, the more we move away from Willow, the more like I feel lenient towards it. You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
In 10 years, we're giving Willow a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, it's got it coming. Okay, let's read some listener mail. Okay, Andy and Jamie both write in. They want to give us an update on the world of tourist judges. I think it's really important that we know that, did you know there's also a Taurus Raging Judge Magnum edition? Oh. So it's even bigger than ever before. And Jamie wanted us to know that there is a Taurus judge that's a little bit smaller, you know, a little bit more practical. But instead of it being a Taurus judge, it's called a public defender. Get it?
I'm wondering if Taurus judge has become like a trending search on Google.
Because of us?
Yeah.
Yeah, they always big.
Yeah, you just can't get enough Taurus judges.
Taurus judge sales have skyrocketed.
Okay, Kirby writes in with a controversial question. He says, this question is for the ragtag team of Joel, Kevin, and Martin. Being that it's the Halloween season and comic book movies seem to be the hot trend of the past couple years, I just have to ask, I don't get what all the hoopla is over the new incarnation of Batman by Christian Bale. The voice is horrendous, so that brings me to my two-part question. One, is it just me, or are you guys not drinking the Bale Batman Kool-Aid either? Two, that being said, what is your favorite portrayal of the Batman?
I don't like Christian Bale's Batman voice. I never did. That being said, I like, and I really like the new incarnation of the Batman. I think that those movies are by far the best, directed, story-wise. And Christian Bale is a good actor, so it's really just his voice that I have an issue with. Who's the best Batman? That's a good one. Probably Val Kilmer, by far.
There's only one Batman.
George Clooney.
There's only one.
Yep. I think I know what you're going to say, and I'm going to agree with you.
His name's not Christian Bale.
His name's not Michael Keaton.
Not Val Kilmer, either.
Yeah, or George Clooney.
It's Adam West.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you two are huge fans of the current Batman movies.
Yeah, I love the movies.
Same
Christian
here.
Bale's probably the best actor to take on those roles. I agree his Batman voice isn't that great, but I deal with it. It's just a voice.
I remember when I saw The Dark Knight and I told Martin that I gave it a 4 out of 5. Him and his brother almost assaulted me because I didn't give it a 5. Like, what the hell? It's not the first time you've done that either.
No, it's not.
Avatar.
I was offended that you didn't give the new Holy Batman a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, as if a 4 out of 5 is a terrible score.
For Batman? Yeah, that's a bad score.
For The Dark Knight?
Yeah.
That's like a 1 out of 5.
Yeah, you're right. There you go.
I'm glad that Kevin agrees with me here.
But that's one of the hardest fives I've ever given.
Okay.
By the way, Kevin Conroy.
Kevin Conroy is the
correct.
That's Batman
Kevin
ever.
Conroy. Look it up. Okay, Michael writes in and says, hey guys, it might be interesting to know that Duke Shroud, the coffee guy from Top Gun, was my acting teacher in college. He was a very bitter but funny man. He often bragged about his Top Gun stardom and claimed Tom Cruise ruined his career by rejecting being in a Top Gun Part 2. Apparently, this coffee dude would have had a bigger role that would have launched his career away from the crappy commercials he does today. Not a day went by that he wasn't absolutely miserable, and it was often claimed among the students that he would spike his coffee. Last I saw him, it was in 2011 on my final day of college, and he was limping with a leg injury. I since have heard he is now retired.
Did he write the Top Gun 2 script? I gave myself a way bigger role.
Justin writes in, my question is for Martin. What position did you play when you played lacrosse? And what was your stick of choice? STX, Brine, Warrior, etc.?
Played center midi. Occasionally I would face off. My stick of choice? The Excalibur. Love a stick. Real light shaft.
Remember at our high school? Remember? Girls played lacrosse.
I do remember that.
Remember that? I remember that. They didn't have boys play that.
Wow. All right, guys. Thank you.
No, in all seriousness, until I went to college, I didn't think guys played lacrosse.
Really?
Yeah, I thought that was just a girl sport because that's what our high school, girls, there was girls lacrosse. There wasn't any guys lacrosse.
Okay. Zach writes in with a little food for thought. When I heard you guys were doing Return to Oz, I was overjoyed. Me and my wife constantly referenced that movie, quoting TikTok, saying things like, my action has run down, or Dorothy. I love it now, but when I first saw it, the Wheelers scared the crap out of me. But now I just see them as acrobats who wanted to be actors doing their best impersonations of Jim Carrey as the Riddler in a little movie you may know as Batman Forever. Also, I like to throw in my hat on the whole Fairuza Balk argument and say I thought she was really hot in The Craft and in The Waterboy, but by the time she stepped down into doing films like The Island of Dr. Moreau, she went off the deep into creepy, disgusting, and those teeth. Talk about catching a snag. Ouch. Anyway, keep up the good work, guys. I can't wait to hear the episode. P.S. I've recently gotten into board games again too, and I found some gems in 1313 Dead and Drive and Break the Safe. I never played Scattergories, but I can only assume how a game whose title refers to animal feces would be played between you three jokers. Throw in a nice glass of steaming piss, which you seem to have copious amounts of at the SF Federal headquarters, and it sounds like part of this complete breakfast. Oh. Okay, what do you have to say about this?
That's absolutely part of this complete breakfast.
Fairuza Balk, agree?
Oh, dude, that's a stone cold lock. You're gonna catch a real rough snag.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of hers.
Yeah, well, I'm not a big fan of 1313 Dead End Drive or Break the Safe, two games that I own, and they're right in the room over there. I could talk about those two things for 10,000 hours, but I won't waste your time.
Thank you.
Oh, this is an amazing email. Amazing. Give me a pen right now. Martin, say this word.
Montclair.
Kevin, say this word.
Montclair.
Okay. Montclair. Say this word.
Rutgers.
Say this word.
Rutgers.
Rutgers. Okay. Check out this email. Hey guys, first, love the show. I have been with you from the beginning through the early no format times, the mystery female guest host, and even the infamous gamer episode. My loyalty has never wavered and never will. Fidelio. I always listen to your show during my commute, and I have yet to master the deadly art of emailing while driving, so the time I get to work, I am normally so busy I never get a chance to respond to some of the things you say in your episodes. So I wanted to take a moment to make a few comments that are long overdue in no particular order. So he has this long email of all these different things he wants to talk about, but specifically, there's something here I need to point out. Ready for this? This is insane. The instant I heard your voices on the first episode, I knew you guys were from Jersey. I am originally from the South, but I lived in Philly for about a decade and became sort of a connoisseur of East Coast accents, able to easily distinguish between New York City's cliche, forget about it, and Philly's Wooter Ice or Maryland's Baltimore Merlin.
It's Balmer.
All right. The giveaway lines was when you guys said Rutgers in passing on in an early episode. Now, if you read that last line out loud, I am 100 trillion billion percent sure that you said Rutgers. People from Jersey don't say the letter T in the middle of words. It is different from people from Philly who would change the T to a D. Rutgers. For example, my best guess puts you in North Jersey, but probably south of Montclair, which if reading this aloud, you just pronounce as Montclair, and probably not too close to New York City since you don't refer to New York as the city. Like a lot of people from North Jersey would maybe as far south as Monmouth County. That's for Joel and Kevin. Martin is probably from up above Patterson somewhere. Y'all strike me as pretty suburban. What are your thoughts on this?
It's freaky.
That is freaky. Oh, crap.
That is like pinpoint deadly accuracy.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's really amazing.
That is very impressive.
This is like Sherlock Holmes.
Man, I'm like shocked right now. That's crazy.
I'm not going to say the town I'm from, but he's very close. He's very close to you guys, too.
Oh, yeah.
You got us nailed. Oh, this is pretty interesting. Sean writes in, wants to talk about Shia LaBeouf, one of our favorite topics here at Yes That Bad World Headquarters. Greetings, gents. I'm running from Sydney, Australia, and would like to bring attention to Yes That Bad School of Acting or Academy. Can't quite remember what the name was. I agree with the positions you've put everyone in except for Shia LaBeouf. I feel he is more of an underdog type character and wouldn't find himself in the position of power, however little it may be, like class president. I also cannot reposition him in my mind after his brilliant years playing Louis Stevens in Disney. Disney's Even Stevens. Quite frankly, I'm surprised I haven't heard any of you mention that show yet, though there is a 10-year age gap between each of you and myself, so actually that makes a fair deal of sense. Anyway, my point is that I see him as more of a class clown than class president. I would like to put this title up for debate and leave it up for you to determine. He's right about that Even Stevens thing, because by the time that show was on the air, I was too busy doing other stupid crap to watch that.
Like watching Rugrats and things
yeah.
like that.
No, I think when I was in college during
Even Stevens. Even Stevens was on when we were in college, I think.
Yeah,
I don't know. I've never seen it. I don't know what it is.
Sean, it's
like Shia LaBeouf's first,
channel.
Yeah, Disney yeah. Channel crap, like Lizzie McGuire.
Okay,
class president.
Yeah, no, he's class president.
Yeah, there's no one better.
He's got to be class president. He's got that.
He
lovable,
gets all the ladies.
He's got that lovable charm. You know.
Yeah, he's adaptable. He's a class clown, but he gets down. He gets serious from time to time.
I think most people would vote for him for class president.
When there's robot testicles involved, he's your man.
Yeah, he's your go-to, right? Him and John Turturro.
Robot piss.
That too. Okay, Matthew writes in, I love the show, and you guys are reviewing some of the worst / best movies I've ever seen in my life. My question to you is this. What is your favorite and least favorite movie of all time that stars the greatest living actor ever, Kurt Russell?
My favorite movie that Kurt Russell was in was Escape from New York, and my least favorite movie that Kurt Russell was in was Escape from L.A.
That actually might be my favorite Kurt Russell movie, Escape from L.A.
Your least favorite is Escape from New York?
Yeah.
I think my favorite one's Tombstone.
That's a tough call. Oh, wait, The Thing. That's way up there. The Thing. Yeah. You know, it's a good dark horse kind of Kurt Russell movie that no one ever talks about? Sky High. You ever
seen
that?
That's a fun movie.
That's a good movie. Look into that if you've never seen it.
It's all right.
It's a good movie. Chris writes in, he wants to know how you know about rival schools, United by Fate, Kevin.
Because I owned it.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into detail about this, but he wants to know all about our rival schools and Power Stone, too.
Oh, yeah. Power Stone for Dreamcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good game.
I'm not going to get into details about that, but before I was a movie guy, I was a video game guy, so very familiar with the works of early 2000s era Capcom.
Power Stone was fun, man.
You like that?
That was a good game. I still have that.
Given the choice, I'd rather play that than Smash Brothers.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
How about, the new Sony Smash Brothers?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Completely ripped off.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that right now.
I know. I've written off Smash Brothers. I'm never playing that again. Did you ever play the Wii one?
No.
That's it, man. That was the last straw. Can't do it anymore.
Okay, Nee writes in and says, I just wanted to say that whenever I hear Kevin's voice, I get an image of Seth Meyers from SNL in my head. Are you okay with that? Can you live with that?
Wait, which one's Seth Meyers? Oh, is Seth Meyers the guy that does the Weekend Update?
He hangs out with Seth Green all the time.
Seth Meyers is much better than Seth Green, so yeah. I'll take that. Thank you.
You would love
that. Is not the guy who I was thinking of. I just looked him up. What the hell am I thinking of? Okay, thanks for those emails, guys. If you want to contact us, you can reach us at yazthatbad@gmail.com. Now it's time for the question of the week, and the question of the week is inspired by Return to Oz. What childhood family-friendly classic would you like to see a dark, sinister, adult-themed sequel made to? Just like Return to Oz. Head on over to yazthatbad.com, leave a comment on this episode's page with your answer. Okay, now it's time to announce next week's movie and to complete our Halloween spooktacular scare-a-thon. One last scary movie for the road. We're going to be watching the cult classic, modern day miracle, 100% medically accurate, The Human Centipede. Oh, yeah, that's right. Kevin, you're excited for this?
Yeah, I can't wait.
Your wife's going to love this.
Yeah, I'm dreading this.
I can't wait to watch this again.
Yeah. So once again, tune in next week when we'll be watching The Human Centipede first sequence. Okay, thanks for listening to the show. If you like what you've heard, please consider subscribing. We have a new episode every Tuesday. Please leave us a positive review on iTunes. Those 5-star reviews really do help out the show. Please help spread the word of the show to all your friends by liking us on Facebook, facebook.com/yadsthatbad. You can follow us on Twitter @yadsbad. You can follow Marta @yadsmart. You can follow Kevin @yadskev. You can listen to the show on all your mobile devices via Stitcher. You can get that at stitcher.com. And don't forget, you can still get our latest premium podcasts, Indiana Jones, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and Avatar, The Last Airbender, available for merely $2 at yeahitsthatbad.bandcamp.com. Once again, thanks for listening to the show. See you next time. Can we all agree, not enough Jeff Goldblum in this movie?
There was nowhere near enough Jeff Goldblum.
We could have used him, right? I don't know what capacity, but
he could have been he could have been at least setting up that electric machine. Like,
he was inside the TikTok man. He just bursts out of his belly.
That is so random.
I don't know. His face just appeared in my mind. I don't know why.